You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We were listening to the Secret Chiefs 3 from their CD Second Grand Constitution and Bylaws. They are nominally affiliated with a group you may be familiar with called Mr. Bungle. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2003, close to or more than, we shall find out, 300 people gathered at the Sunnyvale headquarters of Lockheed Martin Aerospace Corporation, the people who bring you the bombs and missiles for the United States and ship them all over the world. Their largest facility in the state of California is located in Sunnyvale, California, and folks under the moniker of Direct Action to Stop the War gathered there to try to shut down the operations. They showed up at 6 a.m., and about 49 to 50 people were arrested. We're going to hear the details right now. On the line with us is Shahid. He is a 28-year-old law student from Stanford University, and he also is one of the local organizers of the rally in Sunnyvale. Shahid, thanks for joining us on Free Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So tell us a little bit about the organizing. We were just talking a bit off the air, and you mentioned to me that this was sort of an action that local people kind of organized and brought together under the banner, as you mentioned, of Direct Action to Stop the War. Tell us how this all came about and why Lockheed Martin was chosen as a target for protest.
Okay, so separating those into two elements. The first, just with respect to why Lockheed, there's a number of elements, actually, that sort of come together. They manufacture weapons of mass destruction, right? It was very interesting that we couldn't find any in Iraq, and when we found some in Sunnyvale, it just seemed a very compelling reason to object. They commit human rights abuses. There are a number of products which they manufacture which violate international agreements, in particular depleted uranium, ammunition, as well as anti-personnel landmines. And both of those have been ruled by international law-making bodies as violations of international law, yet, and even though most other defense contractors have stopped manufacturing them, Lockheed Martin has not. And they also, if you look at their employment and environmental practices, they're objectionable as well. And so the company does all sorts of things that we find objectionable. And the gall of it, that really sort of the straw on the camel's back, if you will, is that they do it with our tax dollars, right? I mean, we're subsidizing violence internationally, and that's something that we just couldn't accept. And as for the second part of your question with respect to the organizing, the vision for the peace movement is really one of decentralized leadership and one of community organizing and facilitating people's local efforts. And so this was not, I wouldn't say the first certainly, but it's one of the first in a new model of organizing in which we're trying to get local groups to take the lead on actions and then call on their supporters in the surrounding area.
Great. So, Shahid, I'm looking at a copy of the Mercury News today.
Uh-huh.
And there's an article there, and you'll bear with me one second. It starts out, the very first sentence, the anti-war movement is fighting on even as the major battles in Iraq are over and attention has turned to rebuilding.
Right.
What's your comments and thoughts on this aspect of the war in Iraq right now?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it's very easy to think that the war is over, right? But the reality is that the war, in fact, has just begun. What we're seeing winding down in Iraq is the first phase of an ongoing war. And bear in mind that this war is actually, you know, if you want to be rigorous about it, it's been going on for generations, in fact. Ever since the beginning of the Cold War, we've been waging proxy fights around the globe and oppressing people all over. And you could cite any number of instances for that. You could talk about Chile in 1973, you could talk about Guatemala, you could talk about Iran, certainly in 1979. You could pick any number of instances, right? This most recent phase of American aggression saw its birth really in Afghanistan last winter. What we see in Iraq is the next theater in an ongoing war. And so just as the conflict is winding down in Iraq, we also see the administration already rattling its sabers against both Syria and Iran. To think that the war is over, I think, is to approach contemporary events with a irresponsible level of unsophistication.
Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. I'm speaking with Shahid. He's a law student from Stanford, and he took part in a protest Tuesday, April 22nd, in front of the Lockheed Martin Aerospace Facility in Sunnyvale. Tell us about what happened. 49 people were arrested, and just tell us, people gathered really early in the morning, I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, and in fact, a lot of us gathered the night before. We had a bit of a congregation, if you will, from all over the Bay Area at Stanford, and then we went out the next morning at about 6 a.m. Over the course of the day, we had at least 500 people come out, and in fact, the 49 arrest total is a little low as well. We ended up having somewhere between 60 and 70 arrests altogether. Some of the reports that came out halfway through the morning, and we ended up having arrests all through the day. There were three main entrances to the facility, and we successfully blocked one of them for 5 hours. We blocked another one for 2.5 hours, and we partially blocked the third for about 2 hours. So, you know, if you measure the success of the action by that index, it was certainly successful. If you measure it by the nonviolence, it was successful there as well. One of our big fears going into this action was that we'd see a repeat of what happened in Oakland a few weeks ago, where police actually essentially proactively put fire on a group of retreating protesters after announcing an inaudible warning to disperse. No one heard, and they went over the top. They were shooting wooden dowels into people's backs, and that was a big concern. You know, we don't want the face of the movement to be that. We don't want to suffer those sorts of personal injuries. It's just not about that. And we proactively started talking to the police ahead of time. We let them know what we were planning. Very transparent process and very cooperative, quite frankly. They were willing to talk with us and let us know, you know, what their responses to particular scenarios would be. No one was really surprised by how things went down. It was very cooperative and very peaceful for most of the day.
Can I talk for a minute about the tactic of organizing with the police? That seems to be a point of contention in the left, in the various anti-war movements right now,
sure.
The peace movements. And
yeah.
I'm wondering if I can get your thoughts on the efficacy, if you will, of you know, coordinating with the police the elements of the protest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it turns on two levels, right? I mean, the first is that it's almost a public relations question, and the second is more philosophical. So the public relations issue is that mainstream America does not buy subversive movements. It's a historical fact, right? If you want to shift policy in America, and if you want to really wage the campaign for hearts and minds, you have to do it in an above-board fashion. It has to be seen as legitimate. It has to be seen as non-criminal, and if criminal, only in the regulatory sense, right? It's a different thing to show up somewhere and, you know, for instance, throw a bottle at somebody. That's a different level of engagement. It turns people off, and that's not what we're about. I mean, a big facet of the peace movement is reaching out to people who haven't historically engaged with us, right? People who do believe in peace and people who do believe in just the fundamental principles that everybody should have a chance to live unimpeded by aggression, right? And if that's the idea, you know, and this gets more into the philosophical issue, if that's the idea, then we have to reflect our end in our means. If our end is about peace, and our end is about restoring American democracy, and that's a big part of the struggle, our means have to reflect it. And being subversive, adopting criminal means, if you will, to ends which we perceive as pro-democratic, it's just internally inconsistent. If we want to encourage transparency in our decision-making structures as a country, then we as a movement have to also be transparent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk a bit about, let me ask you one follow-up question to that last point.
Please.
You talked earlier a bit about the Oakland docks where police opened fire and used rubber bullets, wooden dowels, etc. Were you involved with that action?
Not as involved. I mean, on the periphery, but we were one of the local organizers in this action here, and we didn't have that level of engagement in Oakland.
Do you know if there was any communication or dialogue between protest organizers and police on
to
that
be honest,
action?
To be honest, I don't know.
You don't know.
I would suspect it wasn't to quite the same degree. I mean, we had an ongoing dialogue with
okay.
the police in this action that spanned several weeks.
And then just one other point to follow that, with the Sunnyvale police being probably highly inexperienced in dealing with crowd control techniques and large demonstrations, I guess that may be sort of one other reason to maybe coordinate with them.
Yeah, that was absolutely a reason for us. I mean, the biggest danger is that we run into a law enforcement agency that isn't prepared and doesn't know what it's doing, and that, you know, it's it imposes cost on everybody, right? Because the police come off looking bad, mm-hmm. we come off looking bad, we come off with injuries, and it turns off the public, and that's not, you know, again, very conducive to our ultimate aims. We were proactive in trying to talk to the police, and they were very responsive and cooperative. They called in other agencies to sort of supplement their force, and I gather that they did some training ahead of time to try to prepare them. And on the whole, they did a great job. There were a few, you know, parts of the afternoon that were a bit sketchy. One of the core organizers actually got injured fairly badly. Yeah, and then one of our police liaisons, actually, who was involved in the negotiation effort, got arrested under very spurious circumstances that raised all sorts of questions, which have yet to be answered, but we're working on following up with them mm-hmm. on those issues.
We're speaking with Shahid, and he is a 28-year-old law student at Stanford University and also a local organizer of the action in front of Lockheed Martin in Sunnyvale, California, on April 22nd, 2003. The Lockheed Martin facility in Sunnyvale is the largest in the state of California. We had an action in Santa Cruz at the Lockheed facility here in that's located in the county at Bonnie Doon. There's a facility, and a number of people went up in early April. And I heard an account of that recently on broadcast on this station. And the programmer, the reporter, interviewed the facility manager, operator at Lockheed. And
interesting.
He referred people to the manager at the Sunnyvale plant. I'm wondering if there was any kind of dialogue with the people at Lockheed yesterday, and can you tell me about what their response was to the demonstration?
Yeah, the police actually were able to sort of open one with Lockheed Martin. It wasn't very productive. They, in an effort to sort of co-opt the protest, if you will, they tried to arrange some sort of deal whereby we could have a little portion of the facility to protest in so that they could continue business as usual. And that obviously is completely unacceptable, because the whole point is to disrupt their operations. And we, you know, expect, on the one hand, refuse the deal, and, you know, sort of aside from that, we couldn't have accepted it if we wanted to, just because it would, I don't know if people would even comply with that sort of an agreement. But, yeah, they were receptive to talking, and I think it behooves them, right? It's in corporate America's interest to engage movements like ours proactively, because, you know, like it or not, the power of the people really will not stop, right? I mean, if there are enough people who object to war and enough people who object to injustice, there's nothing they can do to stop us, right? We have democracy on our side. We have a rich tradition of civil disobedience, and if they don't engage us, they just invite costs upon themselves, not only in terms of us shutting down their operations, but, you know, I think more importantly for them, the public relations image in the long term.
It looks that Lockheed Martin stocks are going up with all the violence and conflict throughout the planet. In fact, I just heard a report that Poland opened up a new plant, and where they're going to do sort of a free trade with the United States, and Lockheed Martin is going to be a huge benefactor from that agreement.
Right.
I also am reading from the same Mercury News article I cited earlier, and it says something very similar, that their stock actually went up 15%. In the first quarter of the year. Do you think that there's any way, aside from, you know, these kind of protests that were done recently with the weapons inspection, to get people to understand what's going on? Because that's essentially the battleground here, is the public mind. And this company has such strong ties to the government, and they are a huge multi-billion-dollar corporation with tons of power and public relations, and so, I mean, can you maybe give me, as a law student, what your thoughts are on that? I mean, how can we really stop
deal with
these
that.
People?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple levels, right? If there's a structural level, there's a more circumstantial level. If we want to talk circumstantially, the best way to get people to recognize what's really going on is for political voices in the mainstream. So I'm talking about Democrats here, and then Greens, who have access to media and to public official means of, you know, making their views heard, to take a stronger stance. And, you know, and as a population, that means getting Bush out of office, and at the very least electing someone else the next time we have a chance. The more structural issue sort of turns on the same idea, right? I mean, if we look at Lockheed Martin's the means through which they pervert democracy include not only campaign contributions, and that's something that's on the political radar screen. It's something that we hear a lot about. There was the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act last spring that attempted to deal with that problem, right? But that, it's under-inclusive because it's only a piece of the problem. In addition to campaign contributions, before people get into office, there's also extensive lobbying conducted by corporations after people get in office. Lockheed Martin spent, I want to say, $10 million between 1990 and 2000 alone in lobbying Congress, and that's completely illegitimate. I mean, corporations should not have a voice in public policy. It's a democracy. It's a voice of the people, not voice of money. And I think that's a fundamental mistake in the way our political structure has evolved. And I don't think that it's a matter of eliminating conspiracies. I think it's a matter of individual citizens re-engaging the political process and taking a rigorous effort to gain insight into what's happening, to look beyond simple cause and effect, to not get all their information from Fox News and CNN. It's important if we as citizens want to restore American democracy and restore the values that this country claims to stand for. It's an individual responsibility that we all have to engage in. And you know, there are structural solutions. You could throw out ideas like proportional representation to increase the representation of minor and third parties so that the debate on the national level is a little richer and less constrained. Term limits could achieve the same thing to a lesser extent. But I think at root, the fundamental root, it's just a matter of American people waking up and taking control back over their information and over their political perspectives.
Again, we're speaking with Shahid. He's a 28-year-old law student at Stanford University, also one of the organizers of a protest on April 22nd in front of Lockheed Martin. Let's kind of wrap up here. I want to just get your, you know, some facts about the protest here. Tell us, so you said about 65, 70 people were arrested. What are they being charged with? Where were they taken? Where were they detained for a long time? Were they just cited and released? What's the story with that? And then I guess maybe just start with that, and then we'll wrap up.
Sounds good. Most of the charges were for disorderly conduct. There was at least one other charge applied to that police liaison who was arrested under dubious circumstances. She was actually charged with assault on an officer because they maneuvered a horse into her and she reached up and touched the horse's neck, and that constituted assault somehow. They were cited and released. Everyone except for individuals who were employing jail solidarity tactics was released by the late afternoon. Most of those individuals who employed jail solidarity were out by evening, and they were detained in two different facilities in Milpitas and San Jose, so just in with different facilities within the county.
All right. And then finally, can you just give us some idea of where this movement against Lockheed is going next and how people can plug into that with, you know, actions in Sunnyvale?
Absolutely. So the campaign against Lockheed, it's actually a campaign against a lot more things than just Lockheed, right? I mean, Lockheed's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
And the movement is absolutely ongoing. The best way for people to tap in, I think, it's to check the website, actagainstwar.org, and that has a running schedule of the next actions that are planned. There are plans in the work around the Bay Area to call attention to a number of different targets, a number of different participants in this military-industrial complex. And Lockheed's just the tip of the iceberg, just the beginning.
Yeah, maybe Bechtel could be one of the next protest sites because they just got a huge $800 billion contract to rebuild in Iraq. So they're based in San
Francisco. I would call you prophetic for having suggested that one.
Well, all right then, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Shahid. I really appreciate your time today, and it's been great talking with you.
Likewise.
All right.
Have a great afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Peace, brother.
That was Shahid, a 28-year-old law student at Stanford University, also one of the organizers at the rally and protest where close to 70 people were arrested in Sunnyvale, California on April 22nd, 2003 in front of the Lockheed Martin facility. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay tuned.